We would like to thank Karen and Jake Abelevitz for sponsoring this morning's Locks and Learn in memory of Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yeshua ben Shimon Dov. The Neshamas should continue to have an Aliyah for all of the sponsorships that they make to spread Torah throughout the community and the broader audience online. Okay, so we're going to jump in to... Today we're going to cover sources... Perek Aleph Mishnah 10 and 11. And in order to understand fully those two Mishnayos, we're going to get a little bit of a background from Rabbi Lau in terms of the historical background. And the main overall theme that we're going to be covering today, I would say, is rabbinic career counseling. And it doesn't mean career counseling for rabbis, but career counseling from the sages in terms of what type of should we work, what type of work, etc. I think it's a pretty fascinating discussion, and at the end we'll have some of the more modern psychological career counseling advice, but we'll get there all in its due time. To start off with, let's look at some of the historical background. Source number one, Rabbi Lau places this set of sages, whose names are Shmaya and Avtalion. Some of you might recognize their names. So Shmaya and Avtalion, he places them around the year... If you remember, anybody remember where we left off with in the approximate year from last week? Where were we in terms of the third set of...
80
years.
What?
Yeah, somewhere between 100 and 0. Okay, so we're still there. Somewhere between 100 and 0. Let's see what's going on in terms of the... This is BCE. Let's see what's going on in terms of the political background, and we still have to deal with the intrigue of the Chashmonaim. So, source number one, Queen Shlom Tzion had succeeded in maintaining calm on both the internal and external fronts. So moving, we're in a relative calm in terms of the outside wars, etc. But immediately after her death, Yanai's firstborn, Hyrcanus II, was appointed both high priest and king. And as we have already mentioned numerous times, it's probably not a good idea to start combining powers. So high priest and king. At the same time, his younger brother, Aristobulus, who was grooming himself for kingship, fomented unrest amongst his father's soldiers and stealthily organized a rebellion. So here we have two brothers fighting for power. After a brief battle, Aristobulus seized power. Hyrcanus surrendered, but did not give up. Assisted by his friend Antipater, they enlisted the help of King Artias of Edom. Together they besieged the house in which Aristobulus and his soldiers had fortified themselves. It is in this context of this war that we read, etc. We're not going to get into that point. But here to start off, we have a big battle between two brothers, Aristobulus and Hyrcanus, for power. Now, go to the right-hand column. The decades after 63 BCE saw a number of rulers over the land of Israel. So that's what we just read in terms of the internal battles. What about the people on top of us? So there was a number of rulers, but it was no longer an independent state. So the whole Chashmonaic rule is no longer in play. Antipater, the Edomian governor, rose to power in 55 BCE and formed a political alliance with Hyrcanus against his brother Aristobulus. Because now we have people within our ranks, within the Jewish ranks, forming alliances with people outside of the ranks in order to get more power. For a number of years, continuing, he ruled wisely, particularly under the patronage of Julius Caesar, who, as a token of his esteem, conferred upon him Roman citizenship and the title ruler of the land of Israel. So this is talking about Hyrcanus. Okay, he appointed his sons as governors over the country, Phazael in Jerusalem, and Herod, who you might recognize, in the Galilee. About 10 years later, Aristobulus' son, Mattathias Antigonus, became stronger and declared war against Phazael. So the family battle has not yet been settled. So Mattathias Antigonus fights against Phazael in Jerusalem. He had Hyrcanus II disqualified from the priesthood, pulling a Mike Tyson move. By cutting off his ear, he killed Phazael, and Herod was forced to flee, finding refuge in Rome, where the Senate proclaimed him king. So that's where Herod starts his power. In the year 40 BC, he returns to Palestine, etc., etc., etc. It's within this context of tremendous infighting, as well as trying to get outside government help in order to solidify our own political campaigns, that we find our two sages, Shmaya and Atalion, trying to spread some good Chazal wisdom. If you look at source number two, here's a tragic source. And the Gemara in Sota, not as tragic as, well, I guess we could rate tragedies. Last week was pretty dark. This week is somewhat less dark, but this is a pretty bad source in terms of its meaning for us and Jewish history. So the Gemara in Sota, the Mishnah says that there's a rule that we should not teach our children, Shlo Yilamed es Bino Yibanis. You should not teach your son Greek. Now, the parameters of that and what that entails, we'll get to for a different time. We actually dealt with that in the past when we spoke about Torah Ramada and past Sunday shiurs before we started Perkei Avos. But for now, let's just take it for granted that there's some message here. And the reason for this message is because of the following story. So, Kishitzaru Malchei Beis Chashmonai Zeh Alzeh. So the setting is that we have these powers within the Chashmonaic dynasty battling against each other. Haya Horkenes Mibachutz. So Horkenes was outside of the Beis HaMikdash structure, but Aristobulus Mibifnim. Aristobulus was sort of in the temple. B'chol yom b'yom, hayu mishalshlin dinarim b'kupa umalin lahen t'midim. So what would happen if you sort of like picture like a siege? So they wanted to be able to bring korbanos, but they didn't have the animals. So they used to take this basket and put coins in the basket, put the coins down, and somebody would send up the animals in the basket back up so that they can bring the korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. So Hayasham Zakin Echad, so there was one elder person, Shaya Makir Bechachmas Yivanis, he was learned in Greek wisdom, Lazlehem Bechachmas Yivanis, Amarlan, so he gave them the following advice. Amarlan, Kozman Sha'oskin Ba'avoda Einim Sarim Bietchen. Right, so who's inside? Inside is Aristobulus. So he tells Horkenes and all of his cronies that as long as Aristobulus is inside, you got nothing. If they're controlling the base of Mikdash, you don't have the upper hand. So rather, what should you do? Lemachar Shilshlu Lehem Dinarim Bekupa Behelu Lehem Chazir. When they send down the money, you should send them back up instead of a nice kosher korban, send them up a pig. When the pig gets halfway up the wall, it took its fingernails and stuck them within the walls of the, presumably we're talking about the Beis HaMikdash here, I'm not sure, maybe it's an outside wall. So it stuck its fingernails into the wall, Eretz Yisrael, Arba Meos Parsa, and this literally shook the entire country, and it moved, whatever this means, figuratively 400 parsas, which is a measure of distance. Osa Shah Amru, or at that time, because of this story, they said, Or Adam Sheyigdal Chazirim, first of all, you shouldn't grow pigs, but Or Adam Shalomad Lebno Chachmas Yivanis, you should not teach your children Greek wisdom. Point of the story here, in terms of our context, not in terms of learning what's appropriate to teach your children or not, but for our context, you see this bitter battle between Aristobulus and Hyrcanus for control over the temple, for control over the following of the people, who's going to go following Aristobulus, who's going to go Hyrcanus, and this is just disastrous. This was not good for the Jewish people. It is in this context, let's see source number three, what Shmaya and Avtalion have to teach us, and it's within this historical context, perhaps could give us a little bit of a better insight. So source number three, Mishnah Yud, Shmaya and Avtalion kibul mehem. So Shmaya and Atalion received the tradition from the previous sages. Shmaya Omer, Shmaya used to say, Ehov es hamalacha, you should love work. Usna et harabanut, you should hate acting superior, so positions of power. Va'al titvada lirashut, and you should not bring yourself to know, you should not make connections with the ruling authority, with the government. Now, you can obviously see, at least in terms of the patterns of interactions, that the bad things that were happening because of Aristobulus and Hyrcanus trying to get the powers of Edom, etc., to help them. So Shmaya is like, don't do that. Don't try to get political power by connecting to the outside government. Now, Avtalion's statement in Mishnah 11 is a little more cryptic. I'm not sure we're going to spend that much time analyzing it, maybe a minute. Let's read it. Avtalion Omer. So Avtalion says, Chachamim, sages, Hiziru b'divreichem, be careful with your words. Shema tachovu chovas galus, V'tiglu l'makom mayim ha'ra'im. So maybe because of something you say, you will be condemned to exile, and you'll go to a place of bad waters. Obviously a metaphor for something, not necessarily that there's no good water to drink, although that would probably be a problem also. But it's a metaphor for it'll be a place of evil waters. V'yishtu atalmidim habayim acharechem v'yamusu, and the students who come after you will be influenced by this outside mayim ha'ra'im, is bad waters. They will die. Again, I guess you could take this literally, but most don't. V'nimtza shem shemayim mishalal, and it'll come that the name of heaven becomes profane. So we might spend a little more time talking about that later, but for now, we're just going to read the simple pshat. Now, so who were Shmai and Abtalion? Anybody ever heard of them before? So they're Gerim, according to some, not according to everybody. So they were two leaders. And there is, theoretically, we're not going to get into this, a halachic problem with Gerim, if they were Gerim proper, converts proper, serving as positions of leadership within the Jewish community. There is some halachic problems with that. So some say it can't be that they were officially themselves Gerim. Maybe their ancestors were Gerim, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to be the Nasi and the Av based in. But if you look at source number four, the Gemara in Gittin says, B'nei Banav Shel Sancheiriv Limdu Torah Barabim. So the children, the grandchildren, the great grandchildren, the descendants of Sancheiriv taught Torah in public. Man Inun, who are these? Shmaya and Avtalion. So they were descendants of Sancheiriv. I don't know why the English it says Sisra. I think I just copied the wrong thing. So the descendants of Sancheiriv learned taught Torah Barabim. Anybody know a similar statement said about other descendants of a famous evil person? So Tita the son, David HaMelech,
Haman.
So B'nai Banav, the same Gemara says that the grandchildren of Haman taught Torah in B'nai Brak. Okay, so this is, so source number four clearly pins them as not within the general lineage of Avraham. And look at source number five, flip the page, Shmai ben Avtalion. It was known to the people around them, and they were actually made fun of because of this, which is a biblical prohibition. You cannot make fun of Gerim for the fact that they're Gerim. But apparently not everybody follows all the rules of the Torah. So in source number 5, the Gemara in Yuma says, Tan Rabbanan, and now keep in mind as we read this, that as we've spoken about in past weeks, there is this tension between the priests and the sages. So the priests at the time, especially those who were following more in the Tzeduki realm, they didn't follow the sages. They didn't like the sages. They battled with the sages. It was a battle for power as well as for the hearts of the people. And this source brings out this tension pretty well. So Tanu Rabbanan, Maisa b'Kohen Gadol Echad sheyatzu mibeis hamikdash. So imagine the Kohen Gadol is leaving the Beis HaMikdash. You could picture, you know, we're singing on Yom Kippur, you know, Mare Kohen, here comes the Kohen Gadol, he's leaving the Beis HaMikdash, everybody's so happy, there's such fanfare, we'll sing a song, but apparently nobody liked this Kohen. V'havu azli kule alma basrei. But they started walking towards him, so they did greet him. But came on the chazina l'shmai v'abtalion, here comes Shmai v'abtalion, now all of a sudden, shafku l'didei v'azli basr Shmai v'abtalion. They leave the Kohen, coming out of the Beis HaMikdash, and they all follow Shmai and Abtalion. L'sof asu Shmai v'Abtalion le'ifture minei de Kohen Gadol. So Shmai v'Abtalion went to go say goodbye to the Kohen Gadol. So Amarlan, the Kohen Gadol said to them, Yasum b'nei amamim l'shalim. May the descendants of the heathen come in peace. Right? So they were calling into, right, just confrontation-wise, you are not as good as me. You are the sons of Gerim, or perhaps Gerim yourself. Amrulay, they said back to him, Yaisun b'nei amamin l'shalem, da'abdin uvda da'aron, v'lo yaisi bar aron l'shalem, d'lo abdin uvda da'aron. So they said back to him, may the descendants of the heathen who do the work of Aaron arrive in peace, but the descendants of Aaron who do not do the work of Aaron, he shall not come in peace. Basically, their message is, what's important? Is your lineage important? Or is what you do important? He says, you could be a Kohen genetically, but you're not doing what Aaron does. You are not living up to the legacy of Aaron in your actions. We, who may not have the genetic DNA of Aaron, at least we're following what the messages of Aaron are.
Within all of this context, we have a little bit of Shmaya Baptalim, we have a little bit of the historical background. Rabbi Lau sums up in source number 6 how this affects their teachings in Pirkei Avos. The meaning of the statement, "Do not seek familiarity with the ruling authorities," is clear. At the height of a civil war, nonpartisanship is the best policy, as siding with either party may undermine one's stature. This is an important idea in terms of, you know, who do you side with? Do you side with the Democrats? Do you side with the Republicans? Do you side with Aristobulus or do you side with Hyrcanus? So maybe the best policy, Shmaya and Atayin are telling you, is that you don't side with anybody. You're not a rabbi, rabbinic figures, Jewish leaders. Apparently, I'm not making a broad statement. There are nuances, etc. But in general, should stay away from siding with any political party. Continuing, the Pharisees instructed their students to take a step backwards and not to become involved in the politics of government. After many years in which the Hasmonean state was characterized by a corrupt and Hellenized bureaucracy, the call to love labor and hate mastery was more than welcome. The call to return to a life of work and labor reflects the disenchantment with the failed Jewish state. Power had corrupted its values and undermined the foundations of society. Shmaya and Atayin's condemnation of political authority was sweeping and addressed itself to all those in positions of power. The earliest record we have of them concerns their relationship with the high priest, and then he goes into the story that we mentioned beforehand. But from this context, we can see why Shmaya and Atayin say, don't connect to government, don't take sides, and just get a job, go do something. Be an active part of the world, but don't necessarily make your life in positions of authority, positions of government, etc.
So Rabbi Tzadkiah never endorses anybody when election time comes.
Rabbi Tzadkiah does not endorse.
Just go out and vote.
It's important to vote, but you know, it's not our business to tell you who to vote for. At least that's our take on it. I agree with Rabbi Tzadkiah on this. Not everybody. Some people do get up and say you should vote for X, Y, or Z people, but that's not. It's not our, I guess we have Pirkei Avos on our side over here at least. Okay, so what I want to do is transition based on this mission in Pirkei Avos and talk about the concept of work. So work is important. Work is a mitzvah. Work is a, you know, some Tanaim say it's actually one of the 613 mitzvahs where it says, you know, Sheshes Yamim Tavod, work for 6 days. It's not just in order to get to the rest of the seventh day. It's that the Sheshes Yamim Tavod, we should work for 6 days, is actually a commandment. That's what we need to do. So there's various statements within Chazal that bring out this point. We're going to skip number 7 for a second. Go to source number 8. Rabbi Yehuda, go to source number 7. Might as well go in order. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. So the context is a halakhic context, which we're not going to get into. But if somebody makes a vow, so if I make a vow that my wife can't work, which I would never do. So the answer is, the law is that the vow actually takes place, but yotzi v'yiten ksuba. I have to divorce her and give her the money of the ksuba. Why? Shehabatalam aviyel adei shiyamun. Because somebody not working leads to craziness. Leads to somebody to just go mentally ill. That's the assumption of the Gemara. And because of that, it goes so far that if I make that vow, I can no longer live with my wife. I can't do that. I have to send her away and give her the ksuba, and she has to do her own thing. It's not acceptable to not work. And it's talking about men, women, it doesn't matter. It's not acceptable to not work. Now, obviously when it comes to people who are retired. So that's an important thing to think about. Look at source number 8. Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra Omer. This isn't, because the point here is that we're not just talking about in order to make money. You could be really, really, really rich. It doesn't make a difference. There's still a value to work. Source number 8, the Avos to Rabbi Nassan, which is a commentary of Chazal on Pirkei Avos. So it's a very early commentary on Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra Omer, Adam she'ein lo melacha la'asos ma'ayas. Let's say you don't have a job. What should you do? So he says, "In Yeso Chatzer Charaba Osada Charaba Yelof Yisasek Ba." Start gardening. Do something. Take a hobby. Shneamar Sheshes Yamim Tavod Vasisa Kom Lachtecha. You have to work. Umatam Alomar Vasisa Kom Lachtecha Lahabias Mishi Yeso Chatzeros Osados Charabos Yelof Yisasek Behen. You have to do something. Rabbi Yossi Omer, he goes even a farther than the previous source in source number 7. Ain Adam Meis Elamitocha Batala. It can shorten your lifespan if you're not doing anything. Now, again, when we say work, it doesn't mean you have to have a 9-to-5 job and a W-2 and an I-9, etc. It means that you have to keep yourself busy. So if you don't have a job, that means that we need to figure out how to schedule ourselves that every day, or at least a bunch of days a week. Yes, we have to take care of ourselves. That's part of a job. But we also need to make sure that we're doing things that are productive. That is a tremendous value within Chazal. And we see the extent that, source number 7, it's pretty extreme, that there's no choice here. It's not a choice to not work. If you make a vow that my wife can't work, it's over. Sure. Sure. Again, I'm not talking about getting paid. What does he say? You don't have a job. You do gardening. I mean, that's it. But you have to have a hobby. You have to do something. Areva, I think desolate or un...
Why is that relevant here?
It means you have something you need to work on, right? So you have a garden that's falling apart. Work on your garden. Again, you extrapolate to anything. If you don't have a garden and you have something else to fix, you have volunteer work, whatever it is. The point is that there has to be some level of a goal of working, of keeping yourself busy. Look at source number 9. The Meiri says, "V'yesh lefarish ehobes malacha, afilu lashir." Even if you have lots of money, klamarshi esasik be'ezad davar shatolas. Do something productive. Lo yamod batal shabatolak uremes lo dvarim kashin. Don't be idle. Idleness leads to bad things. Right? This is over and over and over again. I don't think you're going to find any source in Chazal that disagrees with this. Even if you'll find somebody who says you should be learning Torah all day, that's something productive, right? We shouldn't be sitting at home doing nothing, because that isn't necessarily the best for our productivity, for our spiritual health, for our physical health, for our mental health. It's just not something that we should do. Look at source number 10. So source number 10 is a mitzvah of that a father has to do, or a parent has to do, for a child. So the Gemara in Kedushin says, Tana Rabbanan, Ha'av Chayav Bivno Lamolo, Ulivdoso, Velum Lamdo Torah, Lasio Isha, Velamdo Umda. So there's a broad discussion in terms of what a father is obligated to, what a mother is obligated to, and the Gemara goes into detail. Is it just the father? Is it also the mother? Depends on what we're talking about here. But the main idea is that the father has an obligation to make sure that his son is circumcised, to do pidgin haben, to teach Torah, to get him married, and to teach him a trade, lamdo umnus. And then yesh omrim, thank God for Kingsway, afla shita b'mayim, to teach him to swim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol she'enu malamed es b'no umnus. Let's say you don't do this. You say, nah, I'm not going to do, I'll focus on the other things. I'm not going to teach my kid a job. Malamdo listus. You teach him to be a robber. Listus akadait, is that true? You're actually teaching him to be a robber. El ke'ilu malamdo listus. It means that it's figurative, but it's practical. It's that if you don't teach a kid, if you don't teach your children, you don't teach the people in society to have a job, what are they going to do when they need money? They're going to have to figure out a way to get that money. Again, the practical halach lamaisa, daily news outlets. But working is important here, not just for personal satisfaction and goals, etc., but also just for the fact that we should all be responsible to try as best as we can to have our own financial security. Yeah, Alan.
I don't want to spend a lot of time. Do you know if there's any interpretations of that? Take the question of balance of your productivity against your demands on society. When you're offering more than you're taking, and deciding whether you're working, quote. Or in other words, you could be working in absolute terms, but not really caring about the weight because you're taking more than you're giving.
Okay, so in terms of, I'm sure there's a broader discussion here. Of trying to find what your value in giving to society is. I don't have anything offhand to just say, do this, don't do that. We'll talk about it a different time. Maybe I'll look to see if I can find something. Right, so again, I'm not... Kol is a broader discussion, and maybe one that we'll have in the future when we talk about
In future, I could have done it today, but I figured that we'll save it for a different time because we have other Mishnayos that talk about in Kemach in Torah, etc. So we will talk about that in the future. But let's hold that off for now. So let's assume for now that there's a mitzvah to work. How you fit in kolels into that, I think everybody would agree that there's some people who should be learning or could be learning, have the right to choose to be learning instead of working, and that the community could or should support them for that. In terms of what the number of people that is, and that's a broader sociological discussion and religious one that we'll leave for a different time. But for most of us, at most times, there is a mitzvah to work. Look at source number 11, page 3. Right, this is a really long Mishnah and Gemara. We're not going to see all of it inside. But this is, we're going now from step one. It's important to work because it provides money. It's important to work because it provides something for me to do. Now the question is, does Chazal have any advice as to what profession I should choose? Okay, and the answer is yes. And what I would like to try to do as we read the source is to extrapolate, because obviously the jobs that were prominent or that were common back in the day are not necessarily the jobs that we can get nowadays or that we should get nowadays, and maybe some of the messages that they have that were relevant to job X are now relevant to a different job in the modern day. So let's see what they have to say. So the Gemara in Kedushin says, Rabbi Meir says, La'olam yilamed adam es b'no umnas nikiya v'kala. So you should teach your child, and it is interesting, a broader question is that we are saying this within our framework, that a father has to teach his son this. Nowadays, how does that play out, right? So we send our kids to school, does that mean I'm teaching it to them? So just keep that in mind. So one should always teach his son a clean and easy craft, and pray to him to whom all wealth and property belong. So again, this is a simple philosophical religious point, is that we should acknowledge, no matter what job we have, that everything comes from God. For no craft does not contain the potentials of poverty and wealth. For neither poverty nor wealth is due to the craft, but all depends on one's merit. You have some jobs where people make a lot of money, where some people in the profession make a lot of money, and some people don't make a lot of money, and etc. So it all depends on God. But the idea here is that it should be nikia and kala, clean and easy. What exactly does that mean? We'll have to try to extrapolate. Continuing here, Rav Shimon ben Elazar said, have you ever seen a wild beast or bird with a craft? Yet they are sustained without anxiety. Now they are created only to serve me, while I was created to serve my master. Surely then I should make a living without anxiety. But because I have acted evilly and destroyed my livelihood, etc., etc., we're stuck with anxiety. Okay, either way, we're not going to focus on that. But the point is that work, to some extent, is hard, and Chazal acknowledged that work is hard. And remember, working, going back to Adam, is a curse to some extent, or at least hard work is a curse to some extent. So we'll leave that for that. That's not our topic right now.
Yeah. You're only talking about boys and not girls?
It's a good question. Again, there's societal things involved here. As we saw before in the Mishnah with in Ksubis, is that women were supposed to work also. It was different types of work. But they were supposed to at least keep busy, try to make some money. This Gemara, at least in its targeting, seems to be to men, from fathers to sons, but I don't think that we need to make that broad conclusion, because we have seen that women should have a profession as well. What type of profession should women have? So we're not going to get into that either. That's a whole other question. So what's the different types of job between men and women? Maybe we'll discuss it a little bit later. Yeah.
Question is, active investing. Let's say you're in a position to do that all day. Buy, sell, blah, blah, blah. Is that considered work?
Why not? Right. So let's before we get to practical, modern day, current businesses, let's keep going for a second. So by Abba Gurion, where it's underlined, Abba Gurion of Zadion said on the authority of Abba Gurion, one should not teach his son to be a donkey driver, a camel driver, wagoner, sailor, shepherd, or shopkeeper. So we just crossed off all of these things according to Abba Gurion. You should not teach your son to do these. Why? Because their profession is the profession of robbers. Now, I think for our purposes is that these professions are obviously not things that we're going to be doing
now necessarily. Okay, I mean, some of them, I guess you could. Shopkeeper, yeah, shopkeeper. So the idea, again, I don't think, he's not saying it's forbidden to do any of these things. He's giving career advice here. When you want to choose a profession, you want to choose a profession, at least for your child or for yourself, that you will not be, preferably, sucked in to a profession where most people in the profession are trying to cheat and steal. Now, I'm not saying that's not a broad statement that everybody who does these things nowadays. His assessment of back then was that the people in these professions try to rip people off. They try to steal money. So because of that, stay away from that. Again,
all our forefathers were shepherds. It's not going to know who's a shepherd.
Right, and that. So, again,
the animals eat in someone else's land.
Right, remember the whole thing with Lot, right? So there is a, again, nobody's saying don't do these things. So there, he's saying, the way I'm reading it, as advice, and the broad advice for us is just be careful when you pick a profession. It's not us, sir. There might be benefits to having this profession, but be careful that you pick a profession where, between Avram and David HaMelech, and when Abba Gurion is telling this advice, we're talking about 1,000+ years, times have changed, professions change. Maybe nowadays it's best to be a shepherd, or again, because of various external reasons. So don't get lost in the professions, focus on the message. The message is if it's a profession that is consumed with people who are unethical, you may want to not go into that profession. Keep going. Reb Judah said in his name, most donkey drivers are wicked, while most camel drivers are worthy men. So he just has a different assessment. He says it depends who, what type of the donkey drivers I don't like. The camel drivers I do like. And most sailors are pious. The best of doctors, this is a good one, the best of doctors are destined for Gehenna, and the worthiest of butchers is Amalek's partner. Again, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be a doctor, but it does mean, again, doctors, the profession has obviously changed tremendously over the past 2,000 years. But there are, maybe there's something to be aware of this, is that there is a danger to being a doctor. It's a scary profession to be a doctor. You have people's lives literally in your hand, and you have to be aware of that, and you have to know that before you go into it. Now remember the beginning of the Mishnah that we read says, love work, but don't go into, the Mishnah itself said, don't go into positions of power or leadership, and don't go into, quote-unquote, rabbanut, which some interpret as actually don't be a rabbi, don't be a communal leader. Now, obviously, we need people to be communal leaders, but Abraham J. Twersky quotes a story from the Chafetz Chaim, which resonated with me tremendously, is that the Chafetz Chaim in the early part of his life was chosen to be the leader of some town in terms of a communal leader. But he ditched it. He didn't want to do it anymore. Why? Because he had this, I forgot the exact details of the story, but somebody did something inappropriate with the food. So the food became, the Chafetz Chaim found the guy was saying this was kosher, but it really wasn't kosher. And then the Chafetz Chaim gave him like a second chance, and then the guy died, and he went up to Shemayim, and then Chafetz Chaim had a dream. And the Chafetz Chaim said, and the Malachim asked the Chafetz Chaim in the dream, when you gave this guy a second chance, he gave him also a penalty. So he had to pay some sort of a penalty, a fine for what he did. So the Chafetz Chaim was asked by this angel, when you asked this man to pay the fine, was it a fine in a penalty sense, or was it atonement for his sin? And the Chafetz Chaim answered in the dream that it was a fine in the penalty sense, not atonement for the sin. And then the Chafetz Chaim had a dream later on that the guy comes back to him, sort of complaining to him, how come you didn't tell him it was an atonement for the sin? If you would have told him it was an atonement for the sin, then I wouldn't have had to get punished the way I did in the afterlife, etc. Again, I don't know if the story happened. I didn't hear from the Chafetz Chaim, but the point here is that because of that, the Chafetz Chaim, the tremendous responsibility that he felt for that position, he said, I can't do this. This is not for me. So I think that there is, and people have to realize that what they're doing has repercussions. So if you take a position of leadership, or if you're a doctor, you have to be careful that what you're doing could have tremendous repercussions. And the message of Chazal isn't don't do this. Can't go to that profession. Again, if something's usher, it's usher. But if it's just business advice or professional advice, there are things you need to be aware of when choosing a profession. Keep going. We're going to hold questions because we're going to run out of time. Rabbi Nehorai said, skip the Actually, we did it. So the Rebbe Naran says the next thing. So he says, I abandon every trade in the world and teach my son Torah. Only for man enjoys the reward thereof in this world, while the principle remains to him for the world to come. So Rebbe Naran was of the impression that he just wanted to teach his son Torah. Again, we'll deal with the Torah versus working in a future shir. Go to where it goes from all caps to regular. So it's around five lines after that. So our rabbis taught, he whose business is with women has a bad character. Now again, this is important. Again, in modern times, it's really not a choice. Most businesses have men and women together. But especially back then, and even now, the message I think is still clear, is you have to be careful about the mixes of, you know, the male-female relationship in the workplace. We've spoken about this in the past when we spoke about Altar B'Sichlam Isha, is that there is a problem inherent with men and women working together. It's not usher, and it's necessary, but you have to be aware that there are pitfalls and dangers, and it's Maisin B'chol Yom. It happens every single day where people, because they work together closely with people of the opposite sex, run into tremendous problems. Okay, we'll leave that as that. And he goes to list all of these people have to deal with. Women, goldsmith, carters, cleaners, peddlers, wool dressers, barbers, launderers, bloodletters, bath attendants, tanners, because we just knocked off half the professions over there. Of these, neither a king nor a high priest may be appointed. What is the reason? Not because they are unfit, but because their profession is mean. Okay, another message, is your profession doing a good thing, or is it doing something productive, or is it doing something that leads to bad character on your part? Skip a little bit. Bar Kapara taught, one should always teach his son a clean and easy craft, getting back to that. So what is that clean and easy craft? Melanie, you'll like this one. What is it? And my mother will like this one. Senator Bjuda, quilting. Okay? Yes. Quilting. So now it's time to open up the KJC Women's Organization's knitting to men as well, because that is the clean and easy profession.
Sunday evenings, first of the month.
Sunday evenings for the rest of the month. First Sunday evening of every month. Rebbe said, no craft can disappear from the world. So now this is an important point. Everybody, we need people in every profession. So happy is he who sees his parents in a superior craft, and woe to him who sees his parents in a mean craft. The world cannot exist without a perfume maker and without a tanner. Happy is he whose craft is that of a perfume maker, and woe to him who is a tanner by trade. Again, so main point here, I think, is, and maybe we'll spend a minute extrapolating to our purposes, is that we need to, when we choose the main message of Chazal is have a profession that's clean and easy. What that means in modern day sensibilities, we can elaborate on and extrapolate to, that avoids having sort of engendering bad character, that avoids mixing with people who are of questionable character, and doesn't have a huge amount of taiva in with it, and a huge amount of sort of pitfalls in terms of financial pitfalls or desires pitfalls from a male-female perspective. That's sort of the guiding principle. So how do we move forward? Flip the page to source number 4, the Chovos HaLevavos. So this is around 1,000 years later, but still 1,000 years before us. He has his own set of advice. And we're going to read some of the English, and I'll ask you to read some of this on your own because we are running out of time. But he has his own advice. Having demonstrated the need for man to strive for means of a livelihood, we will now explain that not every man is obliged to explore every one of these means. For there are many ways of earning a living. Some of them are easy, requiring little effort, such as shopkeeping, light handicrafts like sewing, stitching, writing, wholesale supply, contracting, sharecroppers, laborers and caretakers, and agricultural work. Some of them entail much trouble and effort, such as tanning, mining iron and copper, refining silver by smelting with lead, carrying heavy burdens, setting out continually on long journeys, working the land and plowing it, and the like. So some things are easy, some things are hard. So how do you choose? The next paragraph, a person who is strong in body but weak intellectually is suited for an occupation that demands physical exertion within the limits of what he can bear. One who is weak in body and strong intellectually should not choose a physically demanding occupation, but should incline toward that which is easy on his body, which he will be able to sustain. So number one is, how strong are you? How smart are you? That should be something that will help you pick your profession. Next, Every person has a preference for a particular occupation or business over any other, as God has implanted within his nature love and affection for it. So Chavos Halavavos is saying, and this is a really tough statement because some people don't feel it, and they go through a crisis when trying to figure out what job they should do. The Chavos Halavavos is saying that within us, God implanted a certain profession or career that we should be drawn to, that we will be drawn to, sort of like a passion. What's your passion? People like asking. Now again, that's great if you have that passion or if you can find that passion, but lots of people struggle, and seeing college kids, they're just sort of like, what am I supposed to do? I don't know, I don't feel a passion for anything. Should I go to business? Should I be a doctor? Should I go to med school? Should I cover all my bases? Should I be a psych major? Because everybody's a psych major until they figure out what they want to do with their lives, right? So it's really hard to figure it out if you don't have a passion. The Chavos Halavavos is saying we have to try to find that, I guess. The same is the case with other living creatures. Skip down to the next paragraph. Similarly, you will find among human beings that different personalities and physiques are predisposed towards certain trades and occupations. Whoever discovers within his personality and nature an attraction to a particular trade, and his body is fit for it and can endure its difficulties, should pursue it and make it his means of earning a livelihood, accepting its sweetness as well as its bitterness. Let him not be discouraged if his income is denied him on occasion. Rather, let him trust in God that he will provide him with his livelihood all his life. So the Chavos Halavavos' main point is that if you do feel a passion, run with it. Even if there are downsides to it, there's still rules. You still got to follow the halachos, and you got to be careful about all the cautionary tales that we've seen until this point. But the Chavos Halavavos says, follow that passion. Yeah. They don't list teachers.
So
remember that again. It's a good question. Remember that we have to think about cultural and historical context as to when there were actually schools made. The assumption in the mission that we read was that it's the obligation of the father to teach the child. So teachers and communal schooling is a whole other shear, but I think that the reason for that is because the assumption, at least as a starting point, is that parents taught their children. Well, another important point here is that teachers shouldn't get paid. Sorry. To break it to you, but from a classical perspective, and we have to go through the sources, is that that's the reason why all the rabbis had professions, is because they couldn't get paid for their teaching of Torah, so they had to get their profession from the outside, right? So teaching was not a profession. Teaching was just something you did if you had the ability to do it and was encouraged, but it wasn't the way that you made your livelihood. Right. I assume there's a lot of questions. I want to close with just pointing you to two sources on pages 5 and 6. So page 5 is a excerpt from the Psych 101 textbook that I use in my class. And there's two things when it comes to modern day career counseling, which I think does come forth with the sources of Chazal to some extent. So in page number 5, if you look at those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bullet points, the basic thing that we want to think about when choosing a career is, again, if you have the passion, go for it. But then, so there's the personality, there's my internal characteristics, which we'll see on page 6. And then in terms of the context of the job, there are certain jobs that lead to more job satisfaction. What are the points within good that create a good job atmosphere? So number 1, the work feels meaningful, important to employees. Number 2, employees have control over many aspects of their work, such as setting their own hours and making decisions. Number 3, tasks are varied rather than repetitive. Number 4, employees have supportive relationships with their superiors and coworkers. Number 5, employees receive useful feedback about their work so that they know what they have accomplished and what they need to do to improve. And number 6, the company offers opportunities for its employees to learn and advance. Again, we can't all choose what job we're going to have, but if we do have a choice and we are looking for a job, we want to see what is the cultural context of the employer that I'm trying to get a job with, and are these things doable? rabbi. Dr. Martin Seligman, who's not a rabbi, has a book called Authentic Happiness. Where he's big into positive psychology. He started the whole field of positive psychology. And the lawyers here should not feel offended. Some of my best friends are lawyers and family members. But he says, from a psychological perspective, if you look at the job satisfaction, lawyers are like not up there. In terms of enjoying their job. And one of the, he lists three reasons. One of the reasons he lists is that you don't, especially as a young lawyer, you don't choose what you can do. You're told what to do. You have long hours. It's stressful. You're not given the choice as to, I want to work on this case, I want to work on that case. He also says that lawyers are trained to look for faults. And that's a hard thing to separate between, you know, doing it in the job and then doing it at home. And then what was the third thing? I don't remember the third thing. But his point, and I want to make this point clear, is that his point is that doesn't mean don't be a lawyer. It means that when you go into any profession, know what the downsides of that profession could be. And then how do you, if that's your passion, if that's your calling, how do you counterbalance that? How do you go into it knowing that this is going to be a problem, so let me try to fix that problem? The last source in page 6 is an excerpt from a survey. It's the Campbell Interest and Skill Survey Individual Profile Report. So if you go to a psychologist, you can fill out this questionnaire, and they basically distinguish between your interest and your skill level, and have a whole variety of different types of jobs in the influencing realm, the organizing realm, helping realm, creating realm, analyzing realm, producing realm, adventuring realm. And basically through the questionnaire, you're able to see, is this something that A, am I interested in it? And B, am I good in it? Right? So I might be interested in being a programmer, right? But I, or let's say science. I might be interested in, or mathematics, I might be interested in it, but I stink at it, so maybe that's not the best job to go to. So what you want to try to find through this questionnaire is a combination of something that has both a high interest and a high skill level, and then you see all the way on the right side, it tells you whether or not this is something maybe to develop, meaning keep it on your radar, or is it something to avoid, or is it something to pursue? So this person's profile, obviously, if you look at it, it seems like he's more of an, or she is more of in the adventuring realm, right? So this person should go into athletics or physical fitness or military, law enforcement, risks, adventures, stuff like that. So there are profiles that help you try to figure out how to combine your skills and your passion, and then you would try to then pursue that profession.
So these ratings are about one particular person?
This is one particular person, right? If you took, this isn't everybody, right? So if you took this, it would give you your own readout and of what job you would do. So I'm going to take questions in a second. I just want to recap main point. Main point is, when it comes to choosing an occupation or helping others, remember the context of the Gemara is helping your children or helping others, counseling others into choosing occupations. I think number one is that you take the Chavos Lavavos' advice first. If you feel a passion for something, you go for it. Right? If you feel like this is taking your skills and what you want, this is what Hashem wants from you, it's a bracha to have that and then to pursue it and to try to make... And he says, don't worry about money to an extent. Right? Follow that passion and, you know, trust in God. That's the Chovos HaLevavos' advice. Then in terms of the sage's advice from Chazal, from the Gemaras, I think that whatever the profession is, the main point is that it should be something that's quote-unquote clean and easy, which means that there's no big pitfalls of averos that can happen within that profession, or at least if there are, be aware of it and try to compensate for it. And then in terms of what practical profession you should do or not do, I think their list of things is obviously irrelevant to nowadays, but we should be aware of every profession's upsides and downsides. And we should be realistic about, just because a profession might make more money or have better hours or this or that, we have to take all of this into account when choosing a career. Obviously, on an individual level, this needs to be done carefully and I think should be done with help. I think people should look for advice from people who've been in the professions. We shouldn't just choose to run into a profession because it looks nice on TV, right? We need to encourage people to go out and to find a mentor to try to figure out what to do
Otherwise, you're not going to know what it's actually like to be in that job. So that's a little bit of the last line, Ahoves Amalacha. That's what Shemaya tells us. Love your work. This is how you love your work. Okay? We will ask questions and then close for benching. Yeah.
Pointed and said, in the Haggadah. So he has to go to apologize to Rabbi Yeshua. And he arrives at his home and he sees that the walls are black. And he first compliments him and he says, it's good to see that a Talmud.
Whoa. Are you
alright?
Alright.
Sorry.
Can
you...
Are you okay?
Good catch, that balance.
So he says, it's good to see that a Talmud Chacham isn't concerned with interior decorating. And Rabbi Yeshua reprimands him and says, it's not that at all, but I'm forced to be a blacksmith, which is degrading, because you as the Nasi haven't paid enough attention to the living conditions of Talmidei Chachamim. So it's interesting that here we have a Talmid Chacham who's saying that that type, there are apparently types of work that are degrading for Talmidei Chachamim. Maybe that's a different category than the rest of us, or...
Right, so maybe there are, it's a good point, maybe there are things that are quote-unquote degrading, but the Gemara also says that you shouldn't do, that you, it's better for you to do, like, a degrading job, like I think the example is like sort of like cleaning the streets or cleaning up garbage, let's say, than, not to say that's a good degrading job, it's a great profession, but what might be considered degrading from other people's perspectives than get handouts and ask for money. So I think the story in the Gemara that you're bringing out is that there might be a degrading job, but I'm going to do it because I need money, and nothing's going to be beneath me in terms of me supporting my family. Yeah.
There's two quick points. Rabbi Akiva Tatz has a shiur that tells you and gives you ideas on how to find out what your passions are and what you're good at. He actually, if you go, to just draw circles, put all your interests in and passions, what you like in the circle and other things outside. It's a very good way to maybe find what you're here for. And the second is, I really am impressed with the picture of the family with the students, how they need good working conditions on this page.
Right.
When I did a paper on dysfunctional families back when, I thought it was going to come up that it was broken families that made children dysfunctional, and that was not mentioned at all. What the biggest thing was, children need a place of their own, and they found that children that didn't have a place of their own, whether it's their own bed or their own workplace within the home, that usually came, that added to the dysfunction of the family. And so I'm very impressed with this, because we have to teach the children on their own how to be successful in what they're doing in school.
Okay, one more and then we're going to bench, and we can take questions afterwards. Yeah.
This last piece about...
I had my own desk.
Abba Gurion, which is related to Ben, maybe. The last thing that he says is, the worthiest of butchers is a Amalek's partner. Do I have it right by thinking that somebody who becomes a butcher, no offense to butchers, is really sublimating a desire to kill and to maim and to hurt, and by becoming a butcher, you sublimate that base desire, and that's a good thing. Is that what he's saying here?
I think he's criticizing butchers. I would have to see all the commentaries. But I think that you're right. There is this idea of sublimating is a good thing. I think, again, the context of this is that it might have been the butchers back then were all...
to do with a scare.
They were all corrupt, or they were all like saying this is kosher, not kosher, stuff like that.
But not having to do with the base instinct to hurt and to maim.
Even if that is the concept of sublimating in Chazal is a good thing. So it is good if you feel a passion for blood. Chazal say you should become a moel, or you should become a shochet. That's right. A good thing. And I think here it's a critique, not necessarily for that reason. Are we going to close? One more question.